BBC Six Music Podcasts.
Six Music.
This is a free download from the BBC.
Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic.
And now, Adam and Joe.
Do you think this podcast has lost something since we stopped singing the intro? Do you think somebody, there are people that miss it, or do you think most people are secretly breathing a sigh of relief? Oh, thank God they don't do that, idiotic juvenile.
What I think is variety is the splice of rice.
C'est l'aspect de la vie.
Variety is a splice of rice. It's nice.
True,
it got more of a fry about a little bit, and that's a little bit of beef. And why, you know, you don't always have to do it.
Maybe the song intro will come in the middle of the podcast when nobody's expecting it.
Or, hey, what about this? What about a sung outro?
Oh.
How would an outro be different, though?
It would be more melancholic and farewellonic.
Farewellonic. I'm having a farewellonic this week.
Good patronic.
Farewellonic's very painful, but it's good for you. It's
nice. Is it?
Yeah, it's good to get rid of things.
Yeah.
Here's a message from...
What happens? Someone just sticks their hand up your arse and waves.
Exactly.
A farewellonic. And then they pull it out. Check it out. Draw the necessary conclusions. Wash it. And carry on.
It's a nice image to start the podcast with, isn't it?
Thanks.
That's right on the edge there. I don't know if we're
of what?
Of acceptability. James isn't sure about that one.
Yeah. It's fine. Thumbs up.
It's okay. It's got through.
Passes the castle rules.
It's okay for the podcats. They can deal with that.
Yeah.
Now, listen, you know, not all the podcats are kind of silly people. Not any of the podcats are silly people.
They're peopleable. They're peopleable who are capable of being silly.
Exactly.
But they have the full range of, moods available to them.
The mark of a great serious man is someone who can occasionally chuckle.
Be very foolish.
At potties and the Netherlands. Here, for example, is a message from Dominic Waghorn, correspondent for Sky News.
Now, he's an old friend of Adam and mine, and older listeners might be able to relate to this. He's a chap who we had a lot of stupid fun with when we were young.
Mm.
We did naughty, silly, stupid things, and he had long hair.
Stop it.
We did very stupid things. And now, when you turn on the telly, there he is in a very crisp shirt, with short hair, speaking in a very informed and authoritative way about very serious political and social situations in the Middle East.
He is an excellent reporter, despite his ludicrous name. But he says, Dominic Waghorn says, "Hey, Adam and Joe, how are you guys doing? Your podcasts have been lifesavers for me in Libya recently, believe it or not. I hadn't realised my iPhone had been downloading them all, so one day on the road to Ras Lanuf, bored and knackered, I found them and listened to them for hours, avidly giggling away from the back of our van. It was a strange couple of weeks with great periods of boredom punctuated with terrifying lunacy. We would drive for hours along desert highways to reach the front line where hundreds of youngsters were brandishing every kind of weapon that you can imagine and firing them into the air at the slightest sound of a plane overhead. The danger of being shot / blown up by accident were far greater than being caught in an airstrike or an occasional bit of incoming artillery if we drove a bit too close. After 3 weeks in Egypt and a nerve-jangling ride into rebel-held eastern Libya, I was utterly shattered. And listening to you and Joe lifted my spirits enormously. I cried with laughter and fatigue, and my team thought that I had lost it." So thanks a million. Dominic Waghorn. Thanks a lot, Dom.
Thanks, Dom Waghorn.
So there you go. Right on the front line, the podcats are.
And because he's an old friend, whenever I see him reporting from a rooftop over there, all I can think of is, get down off that rooftop,
exactly.
Dominic Waghorn.
Be careful, Dom.
Be careful. Get indoors. There's something disconcerting about very serious news being reported by somebody you know, because somewhere in my mind I like to think it's not real and that it's all slightly staged and that the reporters aren't real. Do you know what I mean? And that it's all a sort of ritual or a piece of theatre. But when it's someone you actually know, it all seems quite frighteningly real. Do you know what I mean?
When it's Dom's Spaghorn.
Yeah, he's a brilliant. He's won many awards, though. He's one
he
of
has.
The absolute best reporters. And God bless you, Dom, and all the people that work with you. They do an amazing job out there.
They certainly do. Wow, this is like Hearts
yeah,
of
this
Britain.
Is like Hearts of Britain. So that's why. Can you not laugh? Are so disrespectful.
That's why we're
canceling. You are so disrespectful.
We're canceling the podcast this week in order to honour
the
brave men.
Shut up. When little Tommy saw Cindy fall into the puddle, he immediately rushed towards her with a stick, putting the stick, holding it out for Cindy. as Cindy nearly went in the puddle and drowned. She held on to the sticky and came out and was fine in the end. So that's why we would like to introduce the Queen. Hello, Queen.
Ah, Laura, Laura, brave
and little Timmy.
Hello, Timmy.
And in fact, forget Timmy. Shove him away. Dominic Quaghorn, reporter.
Hello.
Coming up to take the award from the Queen.
Laura, Laura, so brave, a lovely couple, but you're gonna, you also don't put a, and you're gonna
that's
be drowning in a puddle.
That's enough, Queen.
But you're pulling my other sticky with the beef.
Queen, you're getting confused. It's not a puddle, it's Libya.
A lolly puddle in Libya. Are you pulling my with a lolly stick in a bit? Oh, be careful of the bullets.
There we go, Dominic Quaghorn receiving a Pride of Britain award for his reporting on Libya. Okay. Very touching now, moment here on the Adam and Joe podcast.
There's highlights from a radio show somewhere in this podcast, aren't there? Should we have those?
Quickly.
Hello and welcome to the big British castle. We hope you're having lots of jolly fun. Please obey the rules when you're inside the castle, or we'll jolly have to throw you jolly out upon your arse.
So, Joe, do you watch BBC Four a lot? Do you like to
sure
watch?
Sure, I do. I'm a man. I love the arts.
I love the arts.
I absolutely adore the arts.
I can't get enough arts.
Mm.
I love to be covered in them.
I love the smell of arts.
I like the taste of the arts.
Do you?
Oh, it's nice. It's delicious. What I do with the arts is sometimes I have a nibble, a little tiny nibble. Then I'm so hungry for arts. I stuff it all in my mouth. Can't get enough arts. Paintings coming out, pure paintings falling out of my mouth, and sculptures and things like that. Place
sculptures,
sculptures falling sculptures. Out the corner of my mouth. I love the arts, is what I mean.
Mm. We both love the arts.
We do, don't we? We're from the arts.
Why are you artsing?
Because I enjoy watching those dramas they have based on real bits of history. Like,
yes,
I like them when they get very current as well. Mm. You know, when they dramatize.
Have they
it.
Got some of those on BBC Four?
There's something I saw recently that really surprised me because I didn't realize they'd done it. But it's the Adam and Joe story.
No, it was on BBC Four.
It was on BBC Four.
Wow, and it was one of those prestige productions recreating our.
It won a BAFTA.
Did it?
Yeah, the lead guy won a BAFTA, I think, for his portrayal of you, in fact.
No, who? What actors did they cast in there then?
They cast Daniel Rigby and Brian Dick.
Really?
Daniel Rigby played Joe and Brian Dick played Adam. Mm. And what they did was it was mainly based on the events leading up to us being hired to do the Six Music show.
Wow.
And the subsequent global phenomenon it became. And the producers, I think, chose to tone down the whole middle class southern thing.
Right.
So our accents are not exactly as we speak now. But have a listen to this clip. It's remarkable how they capture the dynamic.
Wow.
What if we change the act? What if we put more of ourselves out there?
What have we been doing for the past 13 years?
We've been a double act, but we've never been us. That's what we should do. Nobody's got what we've got. And I'll tell you what, if it doesn't work out, we call it a day and no hard feelings.
So this new act, what would it be? How would it start?
You'll be short and bad-tempered. And I'll be tall and lazy. But we'll both be idiots.
I mean, it's a little reductive. That was in the years before, you know, you became quite hardworking and started doing.
Wow. They've really captured the way that we and all comedians sort of have a discussion about exactly what they'll do.
Yeah.
And sort of quite a pithy discussion and lay it out in a couple of sentences.
That's the conversation that we had, though. Yeah. We thought we've got to define exactly what this dynamic is before we get into it. Otherwise, it could get a little messy.
That's amazing. What was that really? What was that really from, really?
What do you mean? Eric and Ernie.
Ah, did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I loved it.
Was he good?
It was great. And he deservedly won a BAFTA for that, Daniel Rigby playing. No, was it Daniel Rigby played Eric and Brian Dick played Ernie? So anyway, the tall, funny one won the BAFTA.
Weirdly, I watched one of those this week as well that I bought on DVD when I was away. It was the Falco story.
Shut up.
So they've made a feature film about...
Shut up. What? Falco?
Yeah, Falco.
As in Rock Me Amadeus?
Yeah. It's a dramatised documentary of the life of Falco, and I bought it.
How long is it? 15 minutes?
No. He was a big figure in wherever he was from, Austria.
Sorry.
He's hugely important. Yeah. It has the moment where he decides his name, where he's watching TV. A Falco. Yes, Falco. A Falco.
Yes, that's it. I will be called Falco.
So he settles on it immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
It's not like,
Malco.
That's the scene. He just says it over and over again.
Yeah.
I'll bring in some clips. It's extraordinary.
Oh, I love those things.
But it makes you realise that obviously he's huge in his country. Yeah. So, for you know, the local TV station, it makes sense to make a massive thing out of him. But when you export it into other countries where maybe he's not so famous, it starts showing up the sort of cliches of those things a bit. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
Of course.
And so there must be a very long sequence about Rock Me Amadeus.
You know what? I haven't got to that bit yet.
That's the best bit. I can't wait to hear how that goes.
You needed cheering up because you were feeling rather low. But now you're doing brilliant thanks to Adam and to Joe and their podcast.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam and Joe here. And I think it's time we edged towards retro Textination, talking about last week's Textination subject, which, of course, was time murder. But before that, we have a new jingle. This is from John T. And he says, "Dear Adamski and Joe Bananas, observing listeners submitting versions of your masterful jingles, I decided to follow suit and brain flashed upon reworking retro Textination in the style of my favourite Falkirkian miserablist's Arab strap. So I got my mate Dave to record it with mics and plugs and knobs and drums." This is a slightly... he sent us in like a version of Textination that was... excuse me.
You're right.
Yeah, fine.
Textination. What did he call us? At the top of that email?
Adamski and Joe Bananas.
Joe Bananas is a new one.
Do you like that?
I like it.
Adamski's
been used before.
Yeah, Adamski's
old school. Joe Bananas is good. That's something else people are doing.
Giving us names.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it too.
Most of them are pretty good. So this is very good. This is the less Arab strappy of the two jingles that he sent us, but it is extremely Glaswegian. Check this out.
Used to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration, cause I couldn't join in with Textination. But now my troubles have disappeared, because Retro Textination's here. And now my letter may be read out, instead of chalked in the bin and forgotten about.
It's quite heightening, isn't it, to hear someone who can do that voice as well as we can. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's great to hear someone doing like a proper Scottish accent for a change, rather than the rubbish you hear from a lot
hello,
of these
my dear.
Softer... Oh, your tarties are on fire!
you describe that as Glaswegian. Are you confident about that?
He says he's mailman from Glasgow.
Okay, good. You've got the facts to back up your opinions.
Yeah. I'd buy an album by John T.
He's brilliant, John T.
He's very good.
He's a clever man.
So, time murder. Thank you so much for your messages on this subject. And we were talking about ways that you absolutely indefensibly waste your time last week. Have you got any there, Joe?
Sure. Dear Jay Korn and Uncle Buck, when I'm bored, I sometimes close my eyes and rub my eyelids to induce a kaleidoscopic light show. I experiment with different pressures and movements to create exciting effects and patterns. You may think it sounds a bit loopy, but it's a safe, legal alternative to other psychedelic options and certainly could have saved the Beatles a lot of unnecessariness. Oh, sorry, that's from Righty
that's
in
Righty.
London. Gibbo's the next one. Yeah, Righty in London. Well, what do you make of that?
He's talking about entoptics.
Yes, we've discussed these before.
Phenomenon, isn't it?
This is the kind of paisley, psychedelic paisley design. That
checkerboard I get.
I get paisley.
Do you?
Yeah, my inside of my eyeballs are very Laura Ashley.
Oh, mine are very much like a kind of psychedelic chessboard.
Really? What's the difference between us? And that's why we'll never get on. You have to be careful, though. Be careful with pressing your eyes. They're very valuable eggs.
You shouldn't press them so hard that they pop into your skull and then come out of your mouth.
No. Be very gentle. You've only got one pair of eyes. Did you know the human eyes? Is this true they stay the same size from when you're born? They're the only thing... Is that true?
It is true, I think.
Is that true?
I was chuckling because I used to think that it was the head.
That stayed the same size?
Yeah. You know, like you have arguments. One of my arguments was about whether Concorde went supersonic or at the speed of light.
We discussed that.
And my other argument, which I got very heated, I said that it went at the speed of light, incidentally, listeners. And I was quite old at the time. And one of my other arguments was, did you know that the human head remains the same size from birth until death? Interesting fun fact.
Do another one. Have you got one?
Here we go. This is from Gerard with a soft G, not a hard G. I hate it when people say it like that, says Jared. He says, dear His Royal Buckness and El Cornerino, my girlfriend Hannah, who I call Moomin because she's like a beautiful Moomin, had an important work deadline one evening. I left her to get on with it in our flat, and when I returned later that night, I found her asleep. I turned on the laptop and saw there was a lot of browser tabs still open on her search software that stemmed from two original sets of search results. One was the search term psychological theories of procrastination, and the other had results for health benefits of drinking champagne. Ta-ta from Gerard.
Wow, I'm going to search that.
That's good, isn't it? Just think, now, listen, I'm procrastinating. I better make something out of this and find out about the philosophy behind the whole practice. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to have a glass of champagne.
And find out about the philosophy behind that.
To celebrate.
Finally, here's one from Naomi. I say finally. Kind of made an executive decision there. She says, dear Adam and Joe, I spend a lot of my time spending time in the following ways. I like to select areas on my computer desktop by using my mouse and making squares or rectangles. Brackets, they show in a pale blue colour, usually, and disappear almost the moment you unclick the mouse. Mm. This is a good way to look busy at work, and it's fun to do it faster and faster. I also do it at home. Now, I do that.
Yeah.
And it is fun, isn't it?
Sure it is.
Very satisfying. The squares appear nicer, and the squares are slightly different colours.
Disappear. This is a little bit like the Adam Curtis film on at the moment. All watched over by machines.
Benevolent machines or something.
Lovely Grace or something. Mm-hmm. All about how the computer dream has turned out to be slightly less than we hoped it might be.
There's a second part to Naomi's email. She says, I also sometimes read a pretend magazine in my head. The pages are often formatted in the style of a page that you might find in a typical women's magazine, and the words somehow appear ready for me to read. It's not about writing or thinking about ideas for articles. It's simply reading the words that are there, perhaps about the latest clothing craze, or an interview with David Attenborough or somebody.
Unlikely to be an interview with David Attenborough.
An imaginary magazine that she doesn't actually have to think of. It just appears in her head and she reads it. Now, she may be a genius, and she should work in mags.
She should make a mag.
She
should
make a mag.
That would be a good lady mag, you know, with...
It would be called Naomi.
Sure. Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Gibbo earlier on, so we've got to read Gibbo's one.
Gibbo.
He's in Fleet. He says, to kill time whilst bored, I look up old soap characters on Wikipedia and read their backstories, and then follow the link to another character that they may have been married to or had an affair with, etc. I can waste hours flicking from character to character, reading all these stories, even though I can remember most of them anyway. Afterwards, I feel like I'm literally wasting my youth.
Well, you are.
Literally are, Gibbo.
Wow. I didn't think there was anything more vapid than watching soap operas, but I'm wrong.
2, 3, 4. Adam and Joe with a razor blade overcoat, sitting on a fruit machine, eating dirty pickles with their palms.
Eyeballs. According to general ophthalmology, brackets Vaughan, Aysbury and Reardon, Eva, Appleton and Launge, Stamford, 1999, quote, the size of the eyeball at birth averages 16.5 millimetres in diameter, front-to-back measurement. In adults, the diameter is 24.2 millimetres. The maximum eye size is reached when a person is 7 to 8 years old. So the eye grows 50% in diameter and to something over double its birth weight, plus 115%.
But the head remains the same size.
The head remains exactly the same size, which is amazing.
Which is incredible. That's why it's very difficult for a lady to give birth.
It would be good if that was true, though, the eyeball thing, don't you think?
So what is it that remains the same
nothing,
size?
Nothing. I mean, it's all just chaotic.
Winky?
But,
Nothing.
You know, facts like that should be true, like that dogs can't look up.
Yeah.
You want them to be true. Why can't they be true? Are there any of those things that are true? Are they all just rubbish?
You know who would know?
Who would know?
Stephen Fry.
He would know, wouldn't he? Yeah. He knows everything.
If we had him on the line, we could ask him. Now, I saw a wonderful documentary the other day that came out in 2007. And you remember how much I love the arts?
Yes, I do. You were talking about it earlier.
Absolutely love arts. And if there's one thing I love more than the arts, it's rock and roll.
Right.
And when the two come together, life doesn't get any better for Buckles.
You're cool.
Yeah.
You're so cool.
A culture show special from 2007, this was, with Lou Reed talking to Six Music's very own lovely Lauren Laverne. about why he was recreating his album Berlin from 1973 for a series of live shows. Mm. And it was a really great program, 1 hour with sort of overviews of Reed's career intertwined with performances from Berlin and putting the album in context. And then a very disarming series of encounters between Lou and Lauren herself. Now, Lou Reed is notoriously ornery, if that's the word, and difficult with interviewers and journalists and that kind of thing. I'll play you a clip right now of Lou conducting another interview with a young TV journalist from a Swedish culture program. This is on YouTube. You can find it. Towards the end of the interview, this journalist, who's like a young guy and clearly quite in awe of Lou Reed and doing his best and having quite a hard time with Lou Reed in this hotel room or whatever. The journalist asks cautiously if Lou has any prejudices of any kind, and this is his answer.
Do you have any prejudice?
Me? Yeah. Oh, I don't like journalists.
Journalists?
Oh, I despise them.
Why?
They're disgusting. Mainly the English. They're pigs.
Yeah.
What nationality was that journalist?
He was Swedish.
That's okay.
So at the end he's like, yeah, that's a good point. They are pigs, aren't they? Yeah. So that's your classic standard Lou Reed for a lot of journalists. So Lauren Laverne makes this point at the beginning of the documentary and says that she was a little bit trepidatious. Mm. But Lou likes Lauren. Mm-hmm. He thinks she's absolutely great. And he melts in front of her and is just the model of smiley charm right the way through this interview. He loves all her questions. Everything is just dandy as far as he's concerned with Lauren Laverne. Here's a clip right now of the two of them watching some footage of Lou in the 60s when his hair was big and shaggy and the sexy chemistry really begins to bubble here. Have a listen.
Look at my haircut. An afro.
I thought it looked pretty good.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting on well. Nice little compliment from Lauren there. And Lou Reed really likes it. You know, that's very nice. Then Lauren asks Lou if he was bothered by the very harsh critical reception that met the release of the album Berlin in 73. So Lou brushes away this suggestion as if to say, oh, come on, Lauren. I don't know what you've heard, but I'm, you know, I don't want it to stand in the way of us enjoying some very sexy time together, my whole relationship with journalists. Let's have a listen.
Because the reviews were really, really harsh. And, I mean, did that affect you? I know that you don't care for the opinion of journalists too much, but...
Well, believe it or not, there's some journalists that I'm quite attached to.
Really?
Yes.
Yes. And one of them sitting right in front of me, and she's got blonde hair and she's got Lauren. Here's another clip right now. It's time to actually ask her out, I think, on the program. Lou can't wait until after the interview is over to ask Lauren out. So he decides more or less to do it on the show while they're
What are
recording.
The relative ages here?
So Lou is, well, Lauren, how old is she? She's 30. One or something, early 30s. Lou is 100, I think. No, Lou must be in his early 60s by now, I would say, or maybe mid-60s.
Highly compatible.
I mean, Bowie is mid-60s now, I think, isn't he? So Lou's got to be around that mark. Pretty well preserved in his craggly way and looking quite cool in this interview. But anyway, here's Lou more or less asking Lauren out.
How have you changed since the release of the record first time around to kind of...
How have I changed?
Yeah, have you changed?
Are you,
you
kidding?
Know?
In that amount of time, how have I changed? In so many ways, we'd probably have to sit down and have many, many drinks to enumerate how I've changed in that amount of time.
So let's go on. Let's go and have them
enumerate.
After the interview. I mean, you hear how soft his voice is. Like, normally he's so taciturn and gruff. You get, like, monosyllabic answers out of him generally, or, you know.
What happened next, do you think?
Well, they have to wrap the interview up, finally. I mean, it's a
heartbreaking.
It's a shame. And here is how the interview is concluded, leaving no one in any doubt as to where Lou wishes the relationship was going.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, for me too.
Good luck with the gigs. Thank you.
I guess you'll be one of the London journalists that I'm really in love with.
Thank you, Lou.
Sure.
Then, wow, have you talked to Lauren about
no.
this?
No, and by this time Lauren is sort of thinking, maybe I will have a little slice of Lou. Even though
there's
she's happily married.
Sexy tortoise actually.
With a child. Yeah, exactly. She's sort of thinking, well, flipping it. Is that your Lou?
Yeah. That's him going in for a kiss.
I thought that was the way Bob Dylan sounded when he went in for a kiss with Alicia Keys.
Yeah, that's the same.
The sexy it's old rock.
The sexy old tortoise.
The rock tortoise.
You know the way they pull little bits of lettuce into their mouth, like a centimetre at a time on the tongue, and take that. That's what will be going on there. Lauren Lettuce Laverne. Being chomped up.
I got a bit of your blonde hair now.
Wow.
Adam and Joe. Naughty. Ooh. My nipples.
Fleet Foxes, of course, are in town. They were playing at the Hammy-O. Is that what it's still called?
I didn't know it was called the Hammy-O.
Yeah. Earlier Hammy-O. This week. And my lady partner, girlfriend, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And she reported back an extraordinary occurrence.
What happened?
Do you remember the sort of catchphrase stroke meme this programme used to have?
Stephen,
yes. There was a lot of that going on. Would you say last year or the year before? When did it peak?
Stephen, it peaked 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, it's yesterday's news.
Yeah.
But not according to Mr. Pecknold, the lead singer of the Fleet Foxes.
Right.
He missed it. At the concerts. There was no Stevening at the Fleet Foxes concerts this year. And of course, Fleet Foxes were victims. Is that the right word to use of Stevening quite heavily?
There was a lot of Stevenage at their last series of shows a couple of years
ago. For some reason, out of all bands, they seem to get a lot of Stevening a couple of years ago.
Because they've got sensitive, intelligent listeners.
They do. But this year, at their concerts at the Hammy-O, there was no Stevenage.
No.
And lead singer, Mr. Pecknold, pointed this out. And here's an email that comes from Lucy Beavor, B-W-V-O-R. She says, "So we were at the Fleet Foxes, rather marvellous gig at the Hammersmith Apollo last night. Everyone was having a wonderful time, lots of cheering and whooping at the sight and sound of the lovely mountain men. Suddenly, Pecknold takes to the mic in between songs and says in a curious tone, 'So, like, what happened to the Stephen thing? Was that just a fad?' Cue gasps of breath and literally tens of shouts of 'Stephen!' And of course the appropriate response of 'Just coming!' This went on for a good minute before Mr. Pecknold sidled back up to the mic and sheepishly apologised for opening a great big nest of eggs."
Egg nest. Wow.
"I thought I would send this in, as not only has there been a distinct lack of Stevenage on this run of the show, but I was one of the squadron members who alerted you to the Stevenage being whipped up at the Fleet Foxes UK gigs a couple of years back. Thus, I now feel it is my very special duty to report back on such important events."
Well done,
Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy. You're going to get a medal for that. Here we go. I'm pinning it on your chest. Look at that. It looks nice there. Sorry, I just touched. Okay.
So that's exciting news, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Mr. Pecknold, he missed the Stevenage.
Pecknold, he asked. He was Stephen baiting.
He's begging for it. He associates it with his visits to England.
Yeah.
It's a peculiarly British pastime that's not just a fad. It's something he expects to hear every time he comes to this country.
It's as British as tea, crumpets, croquet on the lawn and hoodies.
Yes. I went to see the Fleet Foxes performing in the BBC, what's it called, musical radio theatre?
Canteen.
Yeah. Last night, they were recording a concert for Radio 2, which is going to be on this Thursday from 8 p.m. with Joe Wiley. And it was beautiful.
No Stevenage there, though.
No Stevenage there. It was a very respectful atmosphere. They were wonderful.
Mm.
There were different sorts of people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. It's quite a Radio 2 crowd.
A lot of mountain men.
Well, there were different levels of enthusiasm. And I don't know whether you've experienced this at a sit-down gig in particular. I mean, you can be more free and easy if you're at a standing gig.
Sure.
You know, you can clap, whoop, holler. This was more of a sort of a concert hall environment. It was more sedate.
People shuffling papers and...
Well, most of the audience wanted to sit and lightly sway in their chairs and enjoy the music. But there was one man who that wasn't good enough. He had to stand up and clap very, very loudly. Woo! Through all the songs on his own. He was the only one standing.
Yeah.
But he made a big thing of it through the whole concert, swaying his arms, shouting and clapping. And then there were another two people that were so excited by him.
Yeah.
And the fact that, look at him, he's really enjoying this concert.
He's starting a thing.
He doesn't care about these stick-in-the-muds. He's right. Everyone else is wrong. And I could see, because I was sitting on the balcony above, I was watching, I could see this woman really trying to get into it in her seat, really wanting to stand up. But her boyfriend was looking a little bit nervous and sort of trying to calm her down. But she said, no, look at him over there, the big man swaying. I want to be like him. And she was starting to disturb everybody around her. So there were lots of different energies in the room and no one quite knew how to deal with it, because it's exciting music. Everyone liked to clap.
Like round their campfire.
Yeah. They like to clap, and you could see that. I don't know how bands feel about clapping, especially English clapping, because it went a bit out of sync every now and then.
It always does, though, doesn't it?
It always does.
It starts off
with
the best intentions.
And your heart sinks a bit at the beginning of the song when the audience start doing that.
Yeah, you think.
And then the clappers themselves realise, we're
totally out of time.
We better stop.
I mean, that must be tricky. That's the test of a real musician, though, isn't it? If you can, because the other thing is that they're hearing it all through their monitors and everything.
Well, you can see that they're all craning a bit. They're all like tilting their necks to listen to the actual drummer rather than the audience, so they don't get sort of pulled off the beat. But it was a fantastic gig, and it was a great audience, and it was really good.
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
Lock the taskbar.
To make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I call it appropriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
It's more laid back than a lot of my jingles.
I like it.
Appropriation.
It's funky.
Let's fire things off this week with an anonymous one.
Ooh.
And this is from a lady who says, when me and my partner find ourselves lying back to back in bed with our cheeks touching, we sing, lady in bed is sleeping with me, cheek to cheek.
That's sexy.
It is sexy.
Is it a typo? She actually, instead of writing bed, she writes bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lying back to back in bad.
That's quite exciting. Let's go to bad.
She's feeling guilty. You got one there?
I have got one here. Hello, Buxosaurus and Cornodactyl.
Ooh,
crikey.
That's the, yeah.
Here we go. The other night, I asked my wife, Shan, if she was running a bath for herself. And she said, no, it's for the cats. So I began to sing Sarcastic Woman to her to the tune of More Than a Woman, i.e. Sarcastic Woman to me. Do, 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 do. That's quite a useful phrase. Annoyingly, I've forgotten to put the person's name there. So, well, the husband of Shan. Thank you for sending
that. Is that S-I-A-N?
Yeah. I was saying it wrong.
Shan.
I say it Shan. Like, yeah, I'm trying to make life interesting.
French for dog, isn't it? We got to deal with pronunciation later on in the show, actually.
No need to say it's the French for dog.
Yeah, but chien is the French chien. For dog.
Chien.
Yeah, the French for dog. Here's one right now from Sam Hume. He's a mailman, not a female woman. He says, dear Buxtables and Cornucopia, the other day you were talking about song parodies people can't help but sing in everyday life, or versions of songs. Whenever it's cold, I simply have to sing to the tune of Elton John's Your Song. It's a little bit chilly, this feeling inside. I feel like my nutties have just shriveled up and died. Don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy thermal undies where my nutties could live. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind how small my nutties have got. But when it gets very cold, it tends to happen a lot.
That's a whole flipping song he's written.
He's got it all in his head there.
Wow.
It's a little bit chilly. That's a useful one as well.
Very useful. Very detailed.
When it's brass monkeys out there.
Here's one from Mike Shinks, who has a wife called Fran. Mike says, hello, boys. Whenever my wife is bemoaning the fact that I don't quite live up to her expectations, I like to sing to the theme from the Gillette advert, Mike Shinks, the best that Fran could get. Even though she gives me a look of despair and pity, I know that deep inside she thinks I'm very funny and that I am indeed well worth having. Mike Shinks, the best that Fran can get.
Doesn't even rhyme with Gillette. This is from Ross of the Canes. He says, Dear A&J, keeping it simple, after receiving an incorrect delivery from my local curry house, I immediately got on the phone to correct the issue. My girlfriend felt like I should just accept the order, and suddenly I found myself shouting, You gotta fight for the right chapati!
Nice.
She groaned. I thought it was genius. It is, Ross.
Here's one last one from Neil, who's a male man. My teenage sons Jake and Oliver came up with this as a way of dealing with their anger at being asked to do the job of recycling in the house. They were so annoyed at the amount of bottles following a recent celebration that they jointly expressed their disgust in the tune of Tiny Temper's Pass Out. We take the bins out, we take the food out, we take the plastic and the cardboard and the tins out. Do you know that one?
No, I'm glad you...
We take the bins out, we take the food out, we take the plastic and the cardboard and the tins out. That's my favourite bit.
That's Temper on his own without Dappy, is it?
That's him doing it a cappella.
Oh. All right, here's one more from me. This is from Ed in London. I once saw my sister looking very interestedly at something in a shop window. Not being able to see what was so interesting, I sang to the tune of Tom Jones's What's New Pussycat, What you looking at? Whoa! I think it may have been a bit too loud as some people turned around and seemed to interpret this as aggressive behaviour. Love you, bye. I mean, it could be a good one for Friday night out, just to jazz things up. Actually take the aggression out of some of those Saturday night situations. What you looking at? Whoa! What are you looking at, you big pants? Are you a man who wants to have a great big fight? Well, you might if you don't stop looking at what you looking at? Whoa!
That's good.
Yeah,
I think it would take the aggression out of lots of fights.
Got the same birthday as Tom Jones.
Do you? You're very similar men.
Yeah, me, Tom Jones and Prontz.
Really?
Sure.
Very, very masculine men. Macho men.
Three masculine, macho musical geniuses born on the same day.
I've got the same birthday as Uri Geller.
Have you really?
Yes.
Wow.
Which means...
You're a couple of benders. Spoon benders, I mean. What?
Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe. Adam and Joe. Ow. The podcast. Adam and Joe.
Touch me.
Adam and Joe.
No, not
that. Adam and Joe.
Arctic Monkeys are one of the bands that Bob Dylan plays on his Theme Time Radio Hour. One of the more modern bands, because generally Bobbles tends to focus on the albums that he loved as a youth or a younger man, at least. A lot of vintage R&B and blues and jazz and country and western. Have you ever listened to Theme Time Radio Hour?
No, I'm ashamed to say. What is there? What's happening in the world of Bob Dylan? Why is he all over all the...
Birthday.
Oh, it's his birthday.
70th birthday 2 weeks ago.
And one of the magazines has done a series of covers with him at different ages.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen those?
No.
They've done him when he was a youngster, a boy. Then they've done him when he was a middle-aged man.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've done him now that he's a funky turtle. And I mean a funky turtle in the old sense of the word. Funky, even though he probably smells lovely. He's got very good standards of personal hygiene, Bob Dylan.
I don't see him as a man that sweats very much.
Which issue would you like out of those three?
Funky Turtle.
The Funky Turtle. Yeah. Do you think that's the biggest selling one?
I would say, because he is a man that has been, in my eyes at least, completely reborn as a creative force, thanks to this radio show that he does.
Yes.
Because for me, he followed the same trajectory as a lot of my favourite artists and a lot of great artists in general. You know, he's at his peak in the early 70s, maybe, and then things start to go downhill. And then the 80s comes and it's devastating for him as it was for Bowie.
Just
and they
like,
start...
Just like N-dubs. I'm thinking N-dubs.
Right.
But keep talking.
You know, things get overproduced and the voice starts to go and suddenly you get the kind of modern Bob Dylan voice.
Yeah. Then Talisa goes on X Factor and band starts splitting, drifting apart.
All that. And, you know, it's just not as good as your classic Blood on the Tracks Bob Dylan and
no.
stuff. How, I mean, there's still lots of good stuff there. And I listened to a wonderful documentary that was on recently. I think it was on Radio 2, and they also played it here on Six Music with Chris Christopherson narrating the story of Bob Dylan. Brilliant stuff. And Christopherson is saying, oh, he's still, you know, churning out the great tunes, even in his dotage. Well, they weren't, you know, they're never as good as like the real Peaches. But then he does this radio show, right, that he started doing in 2006. And they're a series of one-hour shows. This is if you don't already know about them. That went out on satellite radio first, I think an American satellite station, and then the BBC bought them, and they went out on Radio 2 and Six Music. There's 100 of them.
Wow.
And they're really good, but they're quite tightly scripted. So Bob doesn't really ramble, but he does these very charming introductions to a lot of these songs and contextualizes them. And of course, they're all themed. They're all around quite good inventive themes. Like one week it'll be shoes or whatever, and sometimes it's locks and keys.
I hear it's mostly shoes.
Beginnings and endings or... you know, lettuce, that kind of
lettuce.
Thing.
Lettuce, shoes, but saucers of milk. He does a lot of saucer of milk. And just a lot of shows just about getting across the garden.
Comfy socks.
I'm halfway across the garden.
It's very disrespectful.
I get closer to that leaf. Is that a good Bob Dylan impression at all?
No.
Sometimes he gets sidetracked by dandelions. That's why he's late for meetings.
His radio persona is kind of like a sort of dick Chandler-esque,
okay.
Investigative journalist sometimes. Right. You know, okay. You know, sometimes the way that...
Sounding a bit Pacino.
A little bit the way that Chris Rock is sometimes quite staccato with his delivery. Mm. Well, Bob Dylan sometimes does a little bit of the same kind of delivery as Chris Rock.
Anyway, he does all this and it's all tightly scripted. But every now and again, they do these weird things like sometimes they'll have phone-ins. But it'll be clearly a bit of a scripted phone-in. Mm. Or you can't quite tell. You can't tell if there's someone really on the end of the line there.
You can't take a risk with Dylan, though, can you? You can't just have a random person on the phone.
I don't think so.
It's got to be vetted.
Yeah. But and so sometimes you have the strangest conversations popping up with Bobo on the line there. Here's a very surprising phone call from one of the Theme Time Radio Hour shows. Check this out.
Why don't we go to the phones right now? I think I'll check line one. Caller, you're on the air. Well, that's not working. Line two is always good.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Rock and roll. I see line four is ringing. Hello, caller. You're on the air. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hello, Chuckle. Laura, Laura, blinded date. Bob is the queen of lully beef.
Oh, great.
I'm calling from the queen house.
Huh. What's your question?
Right, Chuck. Well, lully couple, if you was in a band, what kind of band were your boy in?
Bananarama.
Well, of course. Everybody says Bananarama, don't they, Chocolully Couple? But I didn't think you were Bubbles. I thought you would be a little bit any different.
Who, by the way, was the uncle of Billy Pumpkins?
I don't think so, actually, Bubbles. I think you're thinking of Terry Turnip, Zalara.
Well, we're very sorry for the error. We'll correct it in all future broadcasts.
Aw, thanks, Laura, Laura, Chocolully Couple. Nice, baby.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye.
I'm a funny person, I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
So here's a little feature right now that is pretty much a podcast-only made-up joke party. So, wow, that's exciting for you, isn't it?
It is exciting. I mean... there's been a question mark over the over the successfulness of this segment. Mm. You know, there's been controversy about whether jokes are made up or not.
Sure. I think this works well, though, don't you? Having it pared down a little bit.
Well, it's a little bit of a toe in the water, isn't it? We're using the podcasts as a kind of focus group, like a sort of vivisection lab with all podcasts in little cages being fed appalling jokes.
Come on, they're brilliant. Look, check this out.
I'm anti-vivisection of this kind. I think it's disgraceful.
This is from Rosie Escott's brother. She sent it in on his behalf. What happened when the vicar got stuck on top of Mr. Ingalls' home?
I don't know. What happened?
You don't have to say that because
when
then
the vicar got stuck on the roof of Mr. Ingalls' home. And I like how you've corrected this because that wasn't what was in the original joke, was it?
No, she put Mr. Walton's home. It doesn't work if it's Mr. Walton's home. It's Mr. Ingalls' home. He does a little prayer on the housey.
A little prayer on the housey. That's quite good. Ooh. What was that? That was a very distant bird dying.
I'm letting it out slowly.
That was a far away fart. That's how court jesters used to communicate in the Dark Ages. It's true. They'd stand on a local hill and just fart into the wind. And then the other jester would would either smell it or hear it. Exactly.
For
like
what
you
reason?
Just evoked. To the latest
what
funny...
What information would they get from that?
Well, it's Morse code. They would... all sorts of information about what the latest jokes were, what would annoy the king and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should read more, man. You're thick.
I read made-up jokes. What do you want? Here's one from Alex. He's a mailman from France. I came up with a really bad joke when I couldn't sleep last night. Brace yourselves. Did you know that Indiana Jones has opened up a new garage / brothel? Yeah, it's called the Harrison Ford Escort Agency.
Mm.
The Harrison Ford Escort Agency. Escort Agency. Mm. Harrison Ford Escort Agency. Ford Escort Agency. And then he puts, I suppose it's not even a joke, really.
No. Alex. I mean, the thing about that one is not enough of the words not enough of the words in the punchline have like, jokiness to them. I mean, he's just basically saying Harrison Ford Escort Agency.
Yes!
Harrison Ford. It's good, it's good.
There's loads of different meanings in there. Three meanings.
I tell you one we get a lot is Harris on Fjord. We get a lot. We get quite a lot of Harrison Ford jokes, and there's quite a lot of sort of... Fjord-based ones, like Swedish-based ones.
They're pleasing him, is there? All right, then. How about this? Actually, this isn't going to turn anything around. James Ash from Stotfold. He's a female man, he says. Says, hi, Adam. Hi, Joe. I need you to read out my made-up joke. No one else thinks it's any good, and I truly feel I'm onto something here. Here goes. Hey, did you hear about the time that Johnny Depp went grocery shopping and subsequently lost all the vegetables in the kitchen cupboard? He looked everywhere. He found the potatoes in a saucepan, the courgettes in a frying pan. Eventually, he found all but one of his purchases. Luckily, Vanessa Paradis walked in and stuck her head in for a look. Johnny, she said, it's the Pyrex that the carrots be in.
That's good, the Pyrex that the carrots be in. What was that? That was actually sucked back up from whence it came.
That was,
wow.
It was subsonic. That's quite good, isn't it, James Ash? I mean, for a female.
That's quite good. That's quite good. It certainly feels authored. That's for sure. It's homemade.
I still feel like we're pushing a boulder uphill here for scorn balls.
It's good. I think, you know, the vetting is now more effective.
Yeah.
And the jokes are definitely getting there.
Come on. I'm not going to give up on it yet. Right, now let's get back on with the podcast. Here we go.
Text the nation. Text, text, text. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And this week, I wanted to talk about something that happened to me a week or so back at the hardware store. I love hardware. I don't know about you, but I had decided to make a blackboard for the children's play area.
That's a very good idea.
And I thought, I'm going to make a blackboard. So I'm not going to buy a blackboard. I'm going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
I
ordered, you know, you can just get paint.
I ordered some blackboard paint.
Did you? Can you just paint that paint there on the wall there?
Paint the hecking wall with the blackboard paint.
Is that what you decided to do?
No, because I didn't want to ruin the wall.
Yes.
I thought I wanted the option of moving the blackboard.
A portable blackboard.
Portable blackboard. So I went out to the hardware emporium and I bought a giant sheet of MDF.
Yes. How big?
Massive. As big as you can get. I got them to shave the edge off, but it was huge. I mean, it was just about big enough for me to be able to drag it along the floor.
You dragged it along. You didn't have it on a little trolley.
Nah, I couldn't find the trolley.
Taller than you?
Yeah, way taller than me.
Really?
I mean, if I laid it lengthways, I could get it just about under my arm. So I was clamping it under my arm instead of dragging it along. But I also had lots of other stuff with me. It was absolutely, absolutely huge.
What an exciting trip.
Yeah, it was amazing. But when I got out, I had to lean it up against the side of the door because I had to put the rest of my stuff...
The car door?
No, the exit of the shop.
Right, yes.
So I had to put the rest of my stuff into the car. So I opened the car. I'm on my own, incidentally, so there's no one to help. So I open the boot of the car. I'm putting my stuff in, and I lean the huge sheet of MDF up against next to the sliding doors of the shop. It was a very windy day, though, right? So as I am walking back from the car to collect my sheet of MDF, the sliding doors of the shop open and a couple exits, a sort of middle-aged couple with their nice Sunday afternoon shopping in their trolley. A gust of wind catches this enormous heavy sheet of MDF and it starts to topple right towards this woman as she's leaving the shop. Holy moly. And she can't see it, and I can see it happening in slow motion. So I instinctively just run towards it and go, "Oh no, watch out!" Too late. It catches the back of her head.
What?
And smacks her shoulder, like scrapes down her shoulder.
No.
Luckily enough, it didn't catch her square on the head. Otherwise, she would have been badly hurt.
Brained.
As it was, I'm sure it was quite painful for her. And it was just horrific. I thought, oh my God, that was my fault. That was Dr. Buckles' fault. So as soon as I saw that she wasn't badly hurt, my next thought was, maybe I'm going to run away now and pretend that it's not my sheet of ridiculously, stupidly left MDF there. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have been so stupid to leave it there if it hadn't been a windy day, but boy, it was daft of me to prop it up there. I don't know.
Was she on the floor at this point?
No.
Did she topple to the floor?
She didn't topple, no.
Did she scream?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like that. Yeah. Was her husband or partner with her?
Husband was there. He was like, oh my goodness.
Oh my God, darling.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was.
And I went up and I said, are you okay? Are you okay? And she said, yeah, yeah. And, you know.
Bleeding? Was she bleeding?
She wasn't bleeding. Thank goodness. She was okay. But it must have really.
Quite a shock.
And a massive shock, yeah. And, you know, they were well within their rights to be pretty furious.
Call the police.
Who the hell has left that there? What complete moron has left that massive, dangerous piece of MDF there? So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, now things are going well for Buckles in one way because I look like a conscientious, caring member of the public who's saying, are you okay? Are you okay?
But they don't know you were responsible for it in the first place.
Exactly. They don't know that I'm the idiot hole that left it there. So I'm thinking, oh, man, shall I just wait for them to walk away before collecting my MDF and putting it in the car? Or what? In the end, I thought, no, I've got to man up. So I get the MDF and I walk back to the car, and I'm only a couple of spaces away from where this couple are parked. And luckily, they were, you know, a nice couple and didn't want to make a big deal out of it. They could easily have got very angry and made a huge fuss. But I was lucky and I thought, well, I better apologize. And you know, obviously, as I'm the guy with the MDF and they could see me loading it into my car, I went up and I said, listen, are you OK? And she said, yes, I'm fine. I said, I'm so sorry. That was my fault. It was stupid to leave that there. I'm really happy that you're all right. But as I was saying it, I immediately started thinking, maybe I shouldn't even admit to this. Because if she then gets, like, back pains or something, she could sue me.
Absolutely.
You know when you're in a traffic accident, however...
Sure, if you're injured in a trip or a fall at work.
Right. But one of the things you're not supposed to do is admit liability. You know, you could say... It's a horrible thing to say to people, but it's a good bit of advice from a legal point of view. You're not supposed to admit that it's your fault. You know, you can check that they're okay.
But you did. You're an honest Buckles.
Well, I find it very hard to do that. Yeah. So I said, listen, I'm really, really sorry. And luckily she was happy with the apology and she said, oh, well, it was windy. It's not your fault. But
so what are we looking for from people? Times when...
Talking about times when you've got a large sheet of MDF and it hurts someone.
This is the most specific explanation we've ever done.
No, I'm talking about apologies. Times when it's been hard to apologize, but you have done so. And maybe techniques for apologizing. Mm. Maybe times that you didn't apologize and you should have done and you wish you had done. We're talking apology stories, right?
Outside my tiny little cafe in Paris, you'll find two men called Adam and Joe. Yeah. All day they sit just talking away. Sometimes I listen and hear what they say. Blah 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 waffles. Blah 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 pancakes. They're making a podcast apparently. It sounds like a load of old crap to me. Oh, I am making the joke.
Last week, I very confidently, we were talking about the bearded star of films like The Hangover and The Hangover 2.
Zach Galifianakis.
Right. And I extremely confidently said, no, it's pronounced Galifianakis. And there was a few messages from people saying...
Saying that you were Rongo Snodgrass.
Rongoloid. It's pronounced Zach Galifianakis. And I found a guy on YouTube who calls himself Pronunciation Book. And he's American, but he goes through various...
Despite the fact that he's an American and has absolutely no right to be tampering with the language.
Goes through and defines for people the correct pronunciation of some commonly mispronounced words. Here he is pronouncing Zach Galifianakis for you.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, all right.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, okay, I get
Zach
that.
Galifianakis.
All right, I get the message. It's Zach Galifianakis. I'll never forget. The thing is that it's spelt Galifianakis, and I think it's because I learned how to spell it, I just felt so pleased and confident with myself.
You're too clever for your own good.
That's the thing.
You're too analytical. That's too right. much brain power.
Yeah.
Too much respect for letters.
Well, I thought that I would go through a few bits of other pronunciation with you. You know, Chien. here's a short list of words for you.
Oh, is this a test?
To deal with. This is a little test for cornballs with this pronunciation test. So the first word, it's another name of a famous film star that Joe has to pronounce. It's the star of Donnie Darko. How would you pronounce that, Joe?
I would pronounce his name Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay, and let's find the pronunciation.
Oh, you know, but I'm vacillating because it might be Gyllenhaal.
Ah, well, you got to settle on one.
I'd go for the most conservative option. Gyllenhaal.
I would pronounce it Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, now that I'm seeing it written down, the Jake is very straightforward. Gyllenhaal. So
Gyllenhaal.
This is how I pronounce it because the J, I think, is pronounced. The J is pronounced puh like a P.
It's a silent
so,
T.
Pook. Pookechenchenchal.
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 Here's the actual pronunciation according to Pronunciation Book on YouTube.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
So I was nearly there.
Nearly
Gyllenhaal,
there.
Gyllenhaal.
Here's a tough one that I only found out recently how to pronounce. A famous German writer.
I know this.
G-O-E-T-H-E.
Goethe.
Right, let's have the real pronunciation.
Goethe.
Yeah.
Goethe.
Yes, because I've read a lot of Goethe.
Because you love Goethe.
I love Goethe.
You see, I always...
I might read a little bit of Goethe right now. Thanks, I'm ready to continue.
My favourite is Goethe. I think he's a better writer.
Goethe.
Goethe. How about this? A word that means the political, economic, ideological or cultural power exerted by a dominant group over other groups.
Yeah, spelt H-E-G-E-M-O-N-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Hegemony.
You're going for hegemony.
Is that... hegemony.
Well, actually, I think...
Hegemony, it's both are right.
It's a question of where you're from. It's a transatlantic thing. So Pronunciation Book goes for...
Hegemony. Hegemony. Hegemony.
Hegemony, no.
And he puts the accent on the second syllable.
He's doing
there.
It like Hermione from Harry Potter.
Right, and that's another commonly mispronounced one. A lot of people going for Hermione. And things like that. But yeah, I think hegemony is acceptable if you're from the UK. The Americans say hegemony. How about this? A word for an initial or early stage. I-N-C-O-H-A-T-E.
Well, this is a good one because I'm not sure I've ever said this out loud, but I've read it a lot. And in my head, it's well, I pronounce it phonetically. Incohate. Incohate. I've got this wrong, haven't I?
I don't know. I've always said incohate when I've said it out loud. Let's see what Pronunciation Book says.
Incoate. Incoate.
No H in there.
Incoate.
Ah, but I like hate.
Exactly. You think it's nice to have a word with hate in it that doesn't mean hate.
Incohate.
Incohate. And finally, a famous German watch manufacturer, T-A-G-H-E-U-E-R.
These watches were very trendy when we were teenagers.
Uh-huh.
I had a big, horrible yellow one.
Did you?
An enormous, horrible yellow one.
And yeah, what about your watch?
And I used to pronounce it Taj Hair.
Like the Taj Mahal.
Taj Hair. No, Tag Heuer is what I used to say. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
What's wrong with that?
That's what I'd go for. Let's see what the real one is.
Tag Heuer. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
But you've got to have that sort of haughty New England accent
Tag.
To get it. Tag Heuer.
Yeah, but Heuer is the key thing. I think the Tag or the Tog is, you know, that maybe that changes whether you're transatlantic or not.
Changes everything.
But Heuer, that's what you're going for. Tag Heuer. I would never have gone for that, like Tom Sawyer.
It's not an important one, though, is it, that one?
Isn't it?
I'm more keen on Jake Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. A pack of Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake
Gyllenhaal.
With a silent P.
If you want to challenge Adam and my pronunciation skills, then you can just send us words that we'll attempt to read out. adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
And we'll manglerise
them. One of the hardest ones, I wonder.
Well, you see, this was inspired partly by my mispronunciation of Galifianakis, but also Maddie Cutler's message. She says, "Hi, Cornmeister and Buckstongle, brackets, have I gone too far?" No. On the subject of egg corns and mispronunciation, I have a habit of mispronouncing names of fictional characters. Please see examples below. 1. Hermione from Harry Potter has been pronounced in my head Hermione for 14 years. 2. Penelope Pussycat from Looney Tunes, always pronounced as Penelope.
Penelope, that's good.
Yeah, this is hard to spell phonetically, so you just pronounce it the same as envelope. Do you think I have issues? Bye, Z's. Maddie Cutler, kiss, kiss, kiss. No, Mandy, you're pretty normal, I would say. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from anyone else who's got similar sort of problems.
T-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-E, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast group, baby.
Zach Galifianakis, Zach Galifianakis, Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis.
Damn it! T-H-E-A-D-A-M, M-S-N-J-O-E, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, that's the podcast group, baby.
Oh, I don't like journalists.
Well, you must like them a bit.
No, I despise them.
Why is that?
They're disgusting.
I see.
Mainly the English. They're pigs.
Well, they can be a bit piggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have a jingle for egg corns because they're an irregular element of the program.
Yeah, but we've got some good ones. Thank you to everybody who sent in your egg corns. If you're not sure what that is, all will become evident when we start to read some out. There are some pretty funny ones here, I reckons. This is from Alex, a mailman from Tunbridge Wells. Dear Adam and Joe, my friend was so blown away by a Britain's Got Talent illusion that he sent his Facebook status praising the deaf-defying stunt.
Deaf-defying.
Deaf-defying. Deaf-defying. Deaf-defying. That stunt is deaf-defying.
That's absolutely deaf-defying.
So he's combining a deft stunt with a death-defying stunt and coming up with deaf-defying.
Deaf-defying.
Which is almost better than you know, he's almost improved it.
It defines deftness. That's a good one. Here's one from Fred of Islington and Sweden. He's got a foot in both camps. Hi, Adam and Joe. I was doing a course one day operating a scissor lift a few years ago during the classroom-based part of... What is a scissor lift?
A scissor lift is a sort of platform that goes straight up, isn't it? With a sort of zigzag mechanism, like a concertina mechanism.
Oh, yes, one of them.
Straight up.
Oh,
yeah.
They look fun, those.
They are fun.
They look wicked.
I'll get you one. I'll hire you one for your birthday. You can just go up and down on it all day.
Oh, man, that would be so good if I could.
I will do that.
Please, yeah. That would be so nice. Yeah. Fred of Islington, he went on a course to learn how to operate one. Lucky, man, you're so lucky. Every time the instructor gave us an important piece of safety advice, he would point at our pen and paper and tell us to make a mental note, waiting for us to write it down before continuing. He says, I'm not a scissor lift driver at the moment. So the guy is saying, he's just got the phrase, okay, I'll make a mental note. But what he means is just make a note.
Make a note. He's got the sort of, you know, the brain, the interior life confused with exterior life.
Right.
The tangible confused with the intangible. Mm-hmm. The physical with the metaphysical.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He should get into some sort of poetry instead of teaching scissor lift operations.
Sure. Make a mental note. And then do you think he's just using biro to scrawl onto his subconscious?
Mental things. Hmm. Here's one from Anonymous. I've recently come across a rather fantastic egg corn via my mother-in-law-to-be. My wedding is 3 weeks away, and the mother-in-law-to-be was describing an outfit she'd seen. I must admit my attention was waning, but when she started describing the finer details, she used the term Del Montes instead of Diamantes. She has since been corrected by my other half, but she will not use the correct term. What lovely Del Montes on that dress.
That's like the ultimate accolade, isn't it? Wow, that looks exactly like a delicious tin of peaches. Mmm.
Nick says, a male person, not sure if this even counts as an egg corn, but my lady partner friend once said one of my favourite things ever. Oh, I'm so tired. I could sleep a horse. What? I'm trying to use that more in day-to-day life. Now, what's going on there?
I could eat a horse and I could...
Or sleep like a log.
Sleep like a log.
I could sleep a horse.
I could eat a log. I could sleep a horse. I mean, that's pretty twisted.
And here's a really good one, finally, from Eleanor, a lady person in York. I thought I'd share this overheard conversation from work today for your occasional Eggcorns feature. One colleague was trying to open an Iron Brew bottle, but she couldn't get the lid off. She joked that this was because she hadn't been drinking her Iron Brew, so she wasn't getting enough iron to make her strong. Colleague number two commented, "Oh, it's like one of those bacon and egg situations." Cue nice. A quick exit to the coffee lounge to giggle. Bacon and egg situation.
Yeah, sure.
What came first, the bacon or the egg?
The bacon.
Mm.
Get it sizzling, then you put the egg in.
Yes.
What goes on in this town is none of your business. None of your business. None of your business.
As long as I'm living here. 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 As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here! What goes on in this town is none of your business. What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm
then
living...
maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Wow, I don't know why all actors don't just give up.
That's Nathan Jackson who put that together. He's a male man. He's 20 years old and he lives in France. And that's what he does with his time. Dear Ads and Jizzle, he says, I'm a big fan of Bronholm. Really like the scene from Taffin, so I thought I'd make a dance mix. Hoping to release the extended mix in time for the Christmas number one. But I don't know if the sounds are annoying enough. Hope you like it.
Well, it could go on for longer. That would become annoying. And then I thought there was an opportunity there to maybe auto-tune the... You know, you could do all sorts of stuff with that, surely.
That's right. I keep feeling I have to give props to the people that turned me on to this thing, Justin Edwards, Dave Armand, and Rufus Jones. He's an actor who turned a lot of people onto it, including Jason Hazley. So thanks, guys. You've really transformed our
That's
world.
That's brilliant work by Nathan Jackson there, creating that dance
yeah,
mix.
Thank you, Nathan.
Kissy Sellout, who is a very important, exciting DJ on Radio 1, who in previous shows has let another thing from this programme slip into the mix. Right? What was it that slipped
into the mix
before?
Oh, it was a little bit of G-Sticks action.
A little bit of Wee
Sticks. Wee Sticks.
G6. Now, G6. Taffin has managed to infiltrate Kissy Sellout show. Have a listen to this clip.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ At War, and right now you're in tune with my mini mix on Jaguar Skills and his amazing friends at BBC Radio 1.
Yes, that's the extended version as well.
Come on.
That's so good.
It's always good to make it to Radio 1.
Could surely be the... I mean, Nathan's already started work on it, but that has to be the cornerstone of an extraordinary dance hit.
I've got to get... Floor smash. I'm going to have a try at that.
Maybe we could do a Taffin-based Song Wars.
Let's do it, man.
You're only allowed to use Taffin when actually not allowed to do any vocals.
Yeah.
Other than that sample.
Good idea.
Good idea.
What about, can you use samples from elsewhere in the movie? Or other Bronholm samples.
Yeah, Bronholm. You can other Bronholm samples. That's a good idea.
All right.
Let's give ourselves a little bit of time for this.
Can we unveil them at Glastonbury then?
Okay. It's going to take a while to get all the Bronholm samples in.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Let's do it, man.
It's a plan. Finally, on this section of the programme, here's another email we had from John in Aberdeen.
Why did you get angry?
I was just getting efficient. I felt we were getting efficient there.
Oh.
We'd planned something for the future.
Of that programme.
I called this a section. It was suddenly very officious.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's happening in this section of the programme?
Shut up.
Shut up.
John in Aberdeen, he sends an email that says, "Hey there, Commander Corndog and Brigadier Buckwheat."
What?
"Remember during Wimbledon, you guys discussed tennis grunting?
Ugh.
I was watching the French Open highlights and thought Taffin might enjoy a set or two of tennis. Here are the results.
Thank you, Pat, please.
Thank you. Quiet, please.
Game Taffin.
It just makes everything better. Thank you very much, John in Aberdeen, for creating that and sending that to us.
Good stuff. Wow. I mean, surely this has got to end with Bronholm on the phone, doesn't it?
It should do, shouldn't it? I've interviewed Bronholm.
Have you?
Yeah, when I was doing my Radio 4 film show stint.
Was he nice or a little frightening?
He was really nice.
Yeah.
I love him. I think he's amazing.
All right, listen, let's put out the feelers now, because you never know who listens to this show.
Bronholm, someone what might would know. We ask him, though?
I don't know. We'll just get him to say the thing. He never would, though, because he's too famous.
No, he's
he?
Got a sense of humour.
Does he?
Yeah, he's a very, very underrated comic actor. The Matador.
Oh, Matador's brilliant.
He's a very, very underrated comic actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very underrated actor per se.
Sure.
Traveling tales, tales of traveling on the train or an automobile or an aeroplane. I want to know what your traveling tales.
All aboard the Skylark!
Very aggressive, a very aggressive jingle. It's a shocking jingle.
It is, yeah.
It's the way it comes in. I mean, there's a sort of static pop, a glitch, and a bang, 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 bang. It's quite hardcore.
It is hardcore. Well, I tone
just feel
it down.
For people listening, maybe they're, you know, having a little stroll.
Well,
in,
where
in the
are
park
all the people
on...
interpreting, you know, jingles for a certain jingle? Why don't they do like a mellow version?
Why don't they do a mellow version of that one?
Traveling
You're quite
Tales.
Right. If you don't like the Traveller's Tales jingle, it's not a question of not liking it. I mean, of course, it's amazing, but if it's... It's just if it's unpalatable to you.
Here's a message from Dominic. He says, Adam, because we were talking about on the podcast last week, we were talking about my jingles being considered too long by some people. He says, Adam, I don't think your jingles are too long at all. In fact, I think the Travelling Tales jingle is two syllables too short. Oh. When it comes on, I feel I need to add the word entail to the end of the final sentence. I'd appreciate it if you could adjust the jingle accordingly. You don't need to change the way the words scan or anything. Just say entail after you've sung, I want to know what your travelling tales, he says. Well, actually, you've got the, you know, you have made a mistake there, because the last sentence of the travelling tales jingle is a brilliant little bit of wordplay, because it actually says, I want to know what your travelling tales. Your travel entails.
Oh.
Yeah?
What your travel entails.
I would like to know what your travel entails.
Yeah, you schooled that listener. What's
that? In your face, Dominic! He says,
Dominic,
unless I...
How humiliating.
Maybe I misheard the line itself, in which case I feel like a Wally. All right, Wally! How you doing, Wally?
Here's a travel entail from Rory in Warwick that I'm going to pronounce Warwick. Mm-hmm. Hello, Dr. Buckfast Tonic and Mr. Cornish Pisky. Saturday afternoon, busy. I like this one because he's written it. Rory's written it in a very pithy manner. Lots of full stop, short sentences. Saturday afternoon, busy train, table seat, couple facing me, genders irrelevant, are uninhibitedly frisky. Mm. Snogs, canoodles, hands up t-shirts, wriggles and murmurs. Too much.
Sexy time.
I decide to exercise the power of my will and engage all-purpose upper-body twitchy spasms at intervals of approximately 30 seconds.
What?
He starts to do weird twitching to try and freak them out and put them off.
Yeah.
Just upper-body spasms like that. I did one. My headphones nearly fell off.
Juggled your keys.
Reaction? The snoggers disengage on spasm number two. And for the remainder of the journey, devote their attention to inoffensive fashion mags. Result? But elation swiftly replaced with sense of guilty unease. Rory in Warwick.
I mean, that's going quite far to start, you know, faking.
But that's good. It's a very good technique. Sometimes some people say that if you get in a difficult situation in the street, you know, if you're in a situation that looks like it might get ugly with some people who are trying to rob you or something, the best thing to do is to act crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed this before, probably. You know,
like Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop. Does he do that?
I don't know. and then they won't come anywhere near you. It's a similar kind of thing, but this is better, I think. The spasming is more subtle.
I know, I'm thinking Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. He does that, doesn't he?
He does that all through all nine films.
Out crazies people. Here is one from Richard Doyle. Dear Adam and Joe, although I normally travel normal class, sometimes if I know that I'll be travelling a few weeks in advance, I treat myself to a first class ticket, as they're quite often only £5 more, which I make back by drinking several cups of coffee, stealing a newspaper and eating lots of biscuits. Ha ha! In your face, man! On one occasion, I was sitting in my reclining leather seat with my laptop, and I thought I'd pop some music on as I'd listened to all of your podcasts. It can happen. As I'm not a yob, I got out my headphones so as not to disturb my fellow well-to-do-looking passengers. I plugged my headphones in and decided what to listen to. Feeling mildly rebellious in my first-class surroundings, I thought I'd kick off with a little Rammstein, followed by Ice-T's Wrong Noodle to Flip With. It's not what it's actually called. I hit play, closed my eyes, and reclined in my enormous leather seat. My music seemed a bit quiet, so I turned the volume up a bit, but it still sounded a bit wrong. But my headphones weren't of the best quality, so I put it down to that. About halfway through Wrong Noodle to Flip With, I realised that the sound wasn't actually coming out of the headphones at all. It was, to my horror, coming out of the laptop speakers and entertaining my fellow passengers. I hadn't pushed the headphone jack in hard enough. So quickly, I jammed it in. My fellow passengers had been nice enough to ignore the yob at the centre of the carriage, blasting out some quite offensive tunes. And I spent the rest of the journey red-faced and trying not to make eye contact. As we got close to my destination, the now quite full train terminated, and I hurriedly packed my stuff up and dashed to the door so I didn't have to face anyone. Now I always double-check my headphones. From Richard Doyle. That's bad, isn't it?
Very bad. Tricky situation. A chap sat opposite me on the tube this week with headphones that literally might as well have just been speakers.
Yeah.
And his music was so loud, and he had a look on his face as if no one could hear this music. And that he was in his cool world, you know, listening to his secret music. But no, we could all hear it perfectly easily. And he looked like a great big idiot hole.
Do you ever let people know when that happens?
No, he became aware because everyone was looking at him and he turned it down and looked sheepish. Then, a few minutes later, someone else came on the tube. And this is completely tangential. He was a huge man, a very big guy, probably in the military or something, big, 7 foot or something. But he had a backpack on and it meant he couldn't sit back in his seat. Right. So it pushed him so far forward in his seat that he was about a foot away from my face. And he stayed on there for 5 or 6 stops. It was very disconcerting. No, just trying not to look at me.
Yeah.
But he was right in my face.
Right in your face.
Brilliant travelling tales there.
Now, do you remember a couple of weeks ago I had a special platform announcement jingle, or a jingle that could be used before any announcement in the travel system. We'll just play it again to remind you. Hey! Have a word! Thought it might be a fun thing, you know, like in France they have the SNCF jingle. Anyway, we got a message from an anonymous man, and he says, "Dear Buckles and Scornballs, long-time podcast member, first-time writer, I'm a male man who wants to remain anonymous for reasons that will become clear. I'm a train driver for a company that takes people in and out of London, and I have to do my own announcements. I eagerly await travel entails to see if any of my work colleagues have been recorded doing robot voices or spouting general whiffles and waffles, but no, nothing as yet. I particularly enjoyed your non-sexy ever-word jingle and decided to rise to your challenge of getting train companies to adopt it for announcements. Whilst working on a train into London earlier this week, I played the jingle at the start of my announcement and ended it with a feeble, love you, bye. Anyway, hope you like it. All the best. Anon from north of Birmingham but south of Manchester." And here's what he recorded. Listen carefully, listeners. So there was a love you bye at the end, and he did start with the ever word jingle there. There were a few bing bongs to disguise the actual destination of the train so as not to make it too clear who the fellow is and get him fired or anything. But nice job! You get some kind of squadron prize for that.
That's amazing. What a daring guy.
I'd like to hear someone playing it on a plane. I mean, you'd really get, you'd really get in trouble then, wouldn't you? Bing bong, ever word. Please fasten your seatbelts.
You don't want that kind of thing on a plane.
Do you not?
No. It would undercut your confidence in the crew.
It would a little bit, wouldn't it?
Imagine if you thought that Dr. Puckules was flying the plane.
we're in trouble.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now have a lovely week.
Thank you. We are the Toilet Men. Good night. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you.
That's it for the podcast, listeners. Oh, I love rambly waffles, don't you?
I love a delicious rambly waffle.
Delicious. Hey, man, you know, we've only got a few more shows left to do. This was show number 10 from 2011. We've only got two more in the studio, and then we're in Glastonbury for three shows.
Very exciting.
And then that's it. But, oh, man, imagine all the famous people we're going to track down and really embarrass in Glastonbury.
Yeah, we don't do very well with interviewing famous people, do we, generally?
No. I mean, I would say my track record with famous people is probably a little worse than yours. At least Roger Moore didn't want to kill you when you...
Like Weller did want to kill you.
Yeah.
Bowie ignored us. He wouldn't be interviewed by us.
I mean,
us.
Bono is one of the world's premier peacemakers, but I bet I could make him want to hurt me.
What about Chris Martin? Why don't we get an interview with Chris Martin?
He can be a little tricky sometimes. I'm sure we could get something embarrassing out of him. Like, really awkward. A really awkward interview with Chris Martin. Let's do that.
Okay.
Okay. So we've got Bronholm Song Wars and Awkward Interview with Chris Martin on the list for Glastonbury. Make a note, please, James.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back with you at the same time next week. Have a good one, listeners.
Goodbye.
I love you. Bye! Ah! Ah! Oh, it's okay,
BBC Six Music Podcasts. If you liked Adam and Joe, why not try Jarvis Cocker's Six Music Show, Sundays from 4. Six Music.
Here's a quick message, actually, from Liam Ringwood. Do you remember we were talking about sticking it to the man the other week?
Mm.
People ringing through apples at a cheaper price there to save 20p sometimes to stick it to that man.
Right.
Liam says, what do you think happens when someone buys something but pretends it's something else? The store computers say it's still there, but someone's waltzed off with it, happy that they've cheated the man out of 20p or some stupid amount like that. Someone has to go looking for it in the warehouse. Maybe it's been mislaid somewhere. If it's fresh fruit, it might start rotting away before anyone notices. You're not cheating the man. You're creating more work and stress for the little guys. Stop stealing things! It doesn't hurt the man. It hurts the honest worker!
Wow, that's chastening.
All right.
He's got a point.
He's got a point, but what are you supposed to do to stick it to the man? Like, get political and, like, go on rallies?
Well, that's the problem. The man surrounding himself with normal people is a kind of a human shield.
You know, you want to do something like he's saying...
Just go up to the man and give him a slap.
In the Julies.
In the Julies.
All right.
Adam and Joe on Six Music.